the case is 97-1664, CR State v. Joel R. Zarnke, and representing Mr. Zarnke is attorney Michael Cohen of Eau Claire.
Good afternoon, may it please this court. This case is before the court today on an interlocutory appeal filed by the state subsequent to a motion being granted in the trial court granting the defendant's request to dismiss two of four counts from the criminal information. The two counts are brought pursuant to Section 948.051C of the Wisconsin statutes, which is the statute prohibiting sexual exploitation of a child. The issue before the court, it is our opinion, is not whether or not that statute is in fact on its face unconstitutional. We believe that it is, and it appears from the brief filed by the state that they too agree that the language on its face is problematic. The question then for the court is what to do about that statute and how to fix it. We do not want to argue or have a thought that we are arguing that the legislature of this state cannot draft a statute that would prohibit the conduct at issue here. It's important for this court to note that the materials, or excuse me, the issue is not involving all sexual exploitation of a child, but rather that activity which involves the distribution of sexually explicit materials involving minors. In 1987, the Wisconsin legislature enacted the current Section 948.05 of the Wisconsin statutes. In doing so, it changed the then existing sexual exploitation of a child statute and explicitly removed from that statute language requiring the state to prove as an element of the offense that the defendant knew that the materials distributed had children in them. That is, that the state had to prove prior to 1987 that the person depicted in the explicit materials was in fact a minor. In 1994, the United States Supreme Court issued its decision in the case of United States versus Excitement Video, and in that case, the Supreme Court stated that is not something which can be eliminated as proof by the state. It's our position that the legislature is now notified, or has been notified, that the current 948.05, parent 1, parent C, as it relates to distribution of sexually explicit materials involving minors, is unconstitutional in so much as it does not require the state to prove that element. The statute in subsection 3 has an affirmative defense built into it. We believe that affirmative defense doesn't apply or cannot be applied as written to cases such as Mr. Zarnke's. Therefore, it's our position that the statute on its face imposes strict liability for distributors.
Why don't you explain, since not everyone here has a copy of that statute, why you don't think the affirmative defense statute applies in this case?
It's our position that the affirmative defense in subsection 3 does not apply because in order for the defendant to utilize that affirmative defense, and the affirmative defense is simply a burden on the defendant to show that he did not know the age of the child or the person depicted in the material. In order to do that, he must or they must submit evidence that there was actual contact of some kind between the defendant and the person in the materials so that the person in the materials could have supplied some type of age verification information to the defendant. In a case such as this, or in other cases involving distribution, as was discussed in the Excitement Video case, the distributor arguably doesn't have that ability. They didn't produce the materials, they didn't have contact with the person in the materials, and therefore it would not be possible for the distributor to have received the age verification information.
So the distributor could not make the affirmative defense required by the statute because the distributor here could not ask the child for an ID, draft card, or whatever else the ID was.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I've got you interrupted. I've read the Court of Appeals decision, and it says, we construe 948.051C to require the state to prove knowledge of minority as an element of the crime. Now, do you read that to cover all of 1C?
I read the Court of Appeals decision as stating that somehow, either implicitly within the current codification of the statute, or it's so construed by the court that such a construction would apply or could be applied as written to all of subsection 1C. It's our position that that is not proper judicial construction of the statute. And while I agree that the legislature could draft a statute that would require upon the state the element, it has not done so in the current section 948.05. It is not for this court, respectfully, to put that element back into the statute. This is, in our opinion, not a case, for example, similar to the Dessinger case, where there was no legislative notice or legislative history enacted or codified to explain what did or didn't happen. It's our position that, first, this court should not need to look to the legislative intent. We believe the statute on its face is not ambiguous, and that as a result, simply looking at the statute, looking how the burden is effectuated, whether or not it's a strict liability statute on its face, that's enough for the court to say this is not a constitutionally valid statute in its present form and require the legislature to fix that. If the court were to find or to feel that this was somehow an ambiguous statute, we believe then that a review of the extra materials or other materials which would be available, legislative history, current section 948.12, the sections under chapter 939 which relate to burdens of proof of age generally in cases involving sexual assault and minors, are additional information that this court could and should utilize to find that as drafted, section 948.05, parent 1C, was drafted with the intent by the legislature to remove from the state the burden of having to prove knowledge of the age of the person.
If I might interrupt you for a minute and ask you a question starting this way. My understanding of our case law is that we are to construe statutes whenever possible to save the constitutionality of the statute. What is wrong in this particular case with severing the affirmative defense as it relates to distribution or to a distributor, and then finding scienter as it should be found in every such statute? What's wrong with that? That's basically what the state has argued. That's what the Court of Appeals ruled. What's wrong with that?
It's the way I read the state's argument and the Court of Appeals decision was not to sever the affirmative defense from the statute, but rather to sever that portion of section 948.05.1c that deals with distribution. It's my position that pursuant to chapter 990.001 sub 7, which is the statute that deals with
severability
and how to interpret newly severed statutes, the court doesn't have the authority to take a statute, sever out the portions that are on its face not proper, and then somehow either say, now it is proper, we're going to say that it's there, or to reenact wording or language that was explicitly removed from the by the legislature. This may be a unique case because we have codified in our legislative history, in note 3, the first sentence, the purpose of the modification was to explicitly remove from the statute the requirement on the state to have to prove this particular element. It's our opinion that for the court to sever the statute is proper insofar as it would remove the unconstitutional portion from the current law. But we do not believe that it is proper for this court to then, in effect, rewrite or reintroduce into that statute, the severed portion, language or a burden on the state which was explicitly removed by the legislature. This is not a case, we believe, where there is an ambiguity or a question behind what the legislature intended by the 1987 modification.
Do you think that if we took the approach that is suggested by the Court of Appeals and by the state, that we would be acting as legislators rather than as judicial officers?
Respectfully, I do.
Well, what's the matter with just, you know, we have to be careful. C says produces, performs, and profits from, promotes, imports, reproduces, advertises, sells, distributes, or possesses. Now, any one of those could be done without a face-to-face relation with the child, so that you would not be able to tell the age. It might be through a photograph, right?
It's possible, yes.
Produces doesn't mean you were there when the film was made. Producers may not have to be. Well, anyway, why can't we just say and see, go right through the statute, just as it is, and says engaging in explicit conduct, comma, but where there is no face-to-face relation between the child and the defendant, the prosecution has the burden of proving knowledge of the age of the child by the defendant. That's really what the state's saying. I mean, you can say sever, you can say not sever, but that's really what the state's saying, as I understand it. But we'll give Mr. Balestrieri an opportunity to correct me. And what's the matter with that? That's just reading the statute in a constitutional way. We're just adding maybe 20 words.
Respectfully, that's what's not prohibited. What is permitted. The case law, and I believe it's been cited in several cases or in the briefs, it's clear not only that the United States Supreme Court, but also our own court, this own court, has stated that it is not proper for a court to add into legislation words that aren't there, especially in situations where there's documentation that the legislature explicitly removed language that was already there.
Well, now, under the comments to the 87 Act, it says that the statute, the revised statute, eliminates the knowledge of the age of the child as an element of the crime of child sexual exploitation. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Which previously the prosecution had the burden. And it imposes instead an affirmative defense that the defendant has to prove, right, by a preponderance of evidence.
Yes.
Right. Well, obviously, they had scienter, intent in there, right, or knowledge. What they're doing is they're just moving who has the burden of proof. Used to be on the state, now the legislature says it's on the defendant.
In 1987, obviously, the excitement video case didn't exist.
I understand that.
And the rule of that case, obviously, was not known or being considered by our legislature at the time that it enacted the modifications to the statute. The legislature intended, when it drafted the statute, to eliminate the burden on the state to prove a particular element.
But not eliminating the defendant's knowledge as an element.
I would argue that the notes codify a belief by the legislature that it was maintaining within the statute scienter relating to the nature of the materials and other issues which they knew had to be addressed. If you look at the New York versus Ferber case or the other United States Supreme Court cases that are also referenced in the note, I don't believe that in 1987 they were thinking that the statute, as it's now drafted, would be an issue for this court today. We didn't know about the excitement video case until 1994. The issue that we present to the court is, unfortunately, the statute as it's currently drafted, not only by looking at its wording, not only by looking at other statutes that we have enacted, not only by looking at the legislative comments, this statute as it's currently drafted isn't on its face properly drafted. It is permissible for this court to save that portion of the statute which the United States Supreme Court says is appropriately set up with affirmative defenses, such as cases involving production of this material. But it is not the proper role of this court to then say, the bad section, we're going to fix it because we're now going to say the legislature really didn't intend to do what they say they intended to do.
But this court has done that before, haven't they, and has imposed a requirement of scienter. That's what, when you read the note which you referred to, it talks about in the last paragraph of the note that without, in other words, the knowledge element recognizes that criminal responsibility may not be imposed for acts prohibited by this act without some element of scienter. So all we're saying is that this is just standard language that we have, that the court, this court has done that in other cases.
I interpret the note in the paragraph that you were discussing, Justice Wilcox, to discuss the issue of scienter relating to the elements of the offense that the legislature left on the state as the burden.
Well, there are two paragraphs there, counsel, and I suggest you look at the paragraph above the one that you're referring to.
I understand your point. This court has stated as recently as this summer in the Hezyar case the issue that severability exists to remove from a statute those portions of the statute that are not properly drafted. It's our position that just in that case you remove the section that is not properly drafted and you remove it and it is no longer good law. You don't take it out and say it's not worded properly, we're going to infer or impose upon the statute words that aren't there, especially in situations such as this, where at the time that the statute was changed, the legislature explicitly stated, we are taking this element out. It didn't take out the notion, the concept of scienter regarding the knowledge of the criminal defendant. It removed the burden on the state to prove that. It is not the defendant's burden. The statute clearly states that it is. We believe that because that's the way the statute is drafted, that that portion of the statute needs to be fixed, but it is not for this court to fix it.
But with knowledge scienter in there, do you agree or disagree that standing alone, after we, if we do sever, that this would be a valid statute? Would it be something that could be enforced with that as far as the constitutionality? That's what we look at.
I would agree that if this court were to hold that the state has the burden of proof as to the element of the knowledge of the age of the person depicted in the materials, that that is a constitutionally permissible rule, that it is a permissible law. Our position is that that is, that for this court to do that would be overstepping.
Yeah, your position is that the legislature never intended scienter to be there, correct? That they took it out. What is your position?
My position is that the legislature explicitly removed
it
from the state,
right,
the burden of having to prove the element of scienter, knowledge of the age of the person depicted in the materials, and shifted that
to the
defendant.
And that's unconstitutional. And that we should not change their language and their intent. That's your bottom line. I mean, they took it out. We can't put it back in.
That's correct.
Counsel, could I ask you a couple questions? Suppose this was the sexually explicit material, and all the persons depicted in this material were 21 years old. Could there be a conviction under 948.05.1b?
For which portion of that 1B?
Excuse me, 1C.
Simply your holding that material?
No. I mean, suppose all the people depicted here are 21 years old.
They're not children.
All adults.
It's not a violation because they are not minors.
Now, that means that the state has to prove that the people in here are children. Isn't that true? Isn't that a fundamental element of the proof?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but by
so. That's all I want to know. Okay, now, the statute says, sexual exploitation of a child. Whoever does any of the following with knowledge of the character and content of the sexually explicit conduct involving the child is guilty of a Class C felony. Now, there's a knowledge element in there, and the state must prove that knowledge element. Why doesn't that require the state to show the defendant knew that this person or these people were children?
The statute, as you just read it, encompasses both permissible and impermissible. It's drafted in such a fashion so that part of it's okay and part of it's not. The portion dealing with the distribution, we believe, under the excitement video case, has to have, as an element of the offense to be proven by the state, not a burden at all upon the defendant, to prove that the defendant knew that the person in that material was under the age of 18. The fact that you might look at the picture and say, that person's not under the age of 18, is enough, perhaps, under the current statute, for the state to establish a prima facie case. But then, the burden is shifted to the defendant to rebut that, and that's not proper. What is proper is that you must establish not only that the material is sexually explicit, not only that the person in the picture is a minor, but that the person who distributed it, that I gave that to you, I knew that that person in that picture was under the age of 18. And it's currently drafted, that is not required.
But what, I mean, I read this, whoever does any of the following with knowledge, and with knowledge involving the child, that's the knowledge on the part of the defendant, isn't it?
It's our position that that knowledge that you're referring to is the knowledge of the character and content of the sexually explicit material, not the knowledge of the age of the person involved. And that is...
Let me ask Justice Prosser's question somewhat differently. Let us suppose that the language of the statute was, which it is right now, exactly as Justice Prosser posed to you, and that the entire statute would end after two, Class C felony. So you have no shift by three of the knowledge issue. See, three shifts knowledge, the burden of proof on knowledge. So, and let us suppose you don't have a legislative history of them taking something out or putting something in. This is the statute, just passed last year. Got it? Just one and two. Now, that statute would be unconstitutional, and I think the state would agree, as to distribution, unless the state proved knowledge by the defendant that the child was under 18. Right? It would be unconstitutional. It has no scienter, at least explicitly, about the defendant's knowledge.
If I could just quickly, yeah. You stated unless the state proved that particular element. My
it would be silent. The statute would be silent about who proved it.
But the issue is where the requirement for that burden is. The fact that the state could, for example, in Justice Prosser's example, circumstantially prove that element, what we're calling an element, prove that fact in proving a different element of the offense, does not meet the burden, the requirement, that they have a separate specific element that they have to prove.
Which is knowledge that the person depicted is under 18.
My
you
time.
May respond.
Chief?
Let him respond. And then.
That the state perhaps would prove in its case that the defendant knew the knowledge of the age of the person in the picture, we believe is of no merit as the statute is drafted, because the statute does not require the state to meet that burden. The fact that they would accidentally fall into it does not make the statute constitutionally valid. I see that my time is
up. Well, we have a couple of questions. You can't get off that easy, sir. Justice Bradley.
Thank you, Chief.
I'm referring to the language that Justice Prosser was reading under sub 1. Whoever does any of the following with knowledge of the character and content of the sexually explicit conduct involving the child. Whoever does knowledge of the character. Doesn't character, I mean, in my mind, character means type. It means a distinct trait. This is the child pornography. Character defines child. Content defines what are they doing? Is it the some kind of sexual act? Is it masturbation? Is it sodomy? What's the content of the act? The character is what's the distinguishing trait? I mean, those are common dictionary definitions. Why, if you accept those dictionary definitions, why isn't scienter set forth there? In other words, that the defendant has to have knowledge of the character, it being child being under the age of 18, of the sexually explicit conduct involving the child. Why isn't that sufficient with an interpretation of character being the distinctive trait or type, the genre, if you will?
I believe there are two answers. The first is that the legislative history of this statute sets forth explicitly that knowledge...
Let's don't get the history. Let's talk about the language, the statute itself. That's what I'm interpreting.
And I believe that the language of the statute, as it's drafted now, that you're referring to, Justice Bradley, is language taken from other cases, particularly New York versus Ferber. And that case... The language that the United States Supreme Court was discussing and dealing with in that case did not deal with age. It dealt with other facets of the material and other facets of the, quote, character of that material. It's my argument that the language of our statute, as it's currently drafted, was taken from that, and I believe that that's also...
Hey, but isn't that legislative history? I'm talking about on the face of the statute, the language. The word character, do you agree that the word character is properly defined as type or genre, particular trait? Do you agree with that? If not, I've got several dictionary definitions that will... Let's say you do agree with it. I can start reading them, but you don't need to hear that. If you agree with that, then why isn't proof of character, proof that it involves a child, sufficient to meet the burden of proving that it involves a person under the age of 18?
Because not every case will deal with materials that have a, quote, child, as you and I may be thinking of a child, someone who is 5 or 6 years old. A child is 17 years old in this state, and a picture of a 17-year-old, perhaps a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, may appear to be a person of the age of 18.
Counsel, I just can't restrain myself. Why aren't you saying, because subsection 3 says it's on the defendant to prove it?
Because
that's
maybe
the easiest
answer.
That's the easiest answer.
Because I interpreted this discussion to center around your restricted statute where subsection 3 was eliminated.
Well, this discussion deals with distribution only and not production.
That's correct.
That's established.
I'll get you off this subject, counsel. Just on to another one very quickly, but it's one that you seem to assume when we talk about standard of review. You normally, benefit of people listening to this who don't understand lawyer talk, normally, the burden of proving this statute unconstitutional is on the one that's challenging the statute. So if this mine run case, the burden would be on you. But you say in your brief that, and it's true, that when the content of a statute being challenged constitutionally implicates the First Amendment speech, then the burden is not on the person challenging the statute, but the burden is on the state to prove that the statute is unconstitutional, beyond a reasonable doubt.
Is constitutional.
Now, in your brief, you just take for granted that it implicates the First Amendment. But I looked at that and I thought, you know, that's simple and it sounds easy because we're talking about a statute involving child pornography and we always think of that as being speech, etc. And But then when you look at the issue that we're talking about here, the issue being one of knowledge, knowledge of a child's age, we are not dealing with distribution. We're not dealing with any kind of speech in and of itself. Why shouldn't you bear the burden here? Because it strikes me as just a bit too facile to say this implicates First Amendment because of the nature of the issue that we're dealing with, knowledge.
It's my interpretation of the case law that the issue of knowledge is not the issue to determine whether or not this statute and this issue is an issue of First Amendment matters. This is, we believe, and we believe that the Thiel case and the Reno case and the Excitement Video case set forth that this is a variable obscenity statute. The United States Supreme Court has stated that issues involving variable obscenity fall within the confines of the First Amendment. I believe that the Wisconsin case law supports that and agrees with that. And
I guess you may be correct. I haven't read those cases. I'm just challenging the fundamental assumption by both the U.S. Supreme Court and possibly this. I haven't read those cases, but this doesn't strike me as speech at all.
And I understand your consternation. I respectfully have to tell you I don't have an answer for you.
But does it matter? Has there been a concession here by the state that it's unconstitutional if the state doesn't have the burden?
I didn't read it in the brief, but we can ask him in about
right.
30 seconds.
Justice Breyer.
Could I ask one more question? We have a video, explicit sexual video, in which the actors are 17 years old, and the state can prove that. But at the beginning of the video, the end of the video, and maybe even during the video, the producer says none of the actors in this video is a minor. Would you try to assert that as an affirmative defense?
In this case?
In a case where the defendant was charged with distributing that video.
Well, I respectfully, that's going to depend on the decision of this court in this case. I didn't mean to offend, I'm not just with respect, but
lots of respect.
With underlying respect.
Let me tell you.
If you had that video and you gave it to me, the first issue would be, what was the theory of prosecution? Was the state prosecuting for you for promotion, for distribution, for selling, for man? So the first question would be, what are you being prosecuted for? If you were being prosecuted for distribution, I would argue, obviously depending on how this decision comes out, I would argue that the affirmative defense cannot apply, that you wouldn't even have the right to utilize it because the current wording of the statute requires you as a distributor to have received some type of age verification, not from the wording of the video, but from the person depicted in the video. And that can't happen if you're receiving that video from this video store and then giving it to me. If somehow the case ended up in court and we were litigating that to a jury, perhaps, obviously I would attempt to throw everything I could at the jury to get the jury to find that my client shouldn't be convicted. But again, I'm going to have to wait to see how the court rules on this case to find out what to do in Mr. Zonke's case. And that's because obviously Mr. Zonke's case is still going on, and it's important for this court to realize that there are other charges he's facing. These are not the only charges. And again, my time is up. I'll wait for rebuttal.
Okay, counsel, thank you. Mr. Ballesteri, representing the state of Wisconsin, Assistant Attorney General. Welcome to Superior.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. I think I would like to start out my argument by taking a little different approach than I took in my brief. And that is, I would like to try to distinguish this case from State versus Darrell Hall, which is the case that involved the constitutionality of the drug tax statute. These are two very, very different situations, both legislatively and judicially. In Hall, with the drug tax stamp statute, as you pointed out repeatedly in your opinion, the legislature...
Which one, the majority or the dissent?
The majority.
All right.
The majority, yes, that's right. You were in the...
Some of us like the dissent.
But the majority is now the law.
The majority pointed out repeatedly in its opinion for the court that the legislature intended, in that case, to enact an unconstitutional statute, knowing that it was unconstitutional. The purpose of the drug tax stamp statute was to get drug dealers to incriminate themselves. You can't do that constitutionally. The legislature knew it, and yet they went ahead and enacted the statute anyway. And the majority in the Daryl Hall case said, we're not going to pull your fat out of the fire. Nice legal phrase. Said, you enacted an unconstitutional statute, you're stuck with an unconstitutional statute. We're not going to rewrite that statute that you intended to make unconstitutional to make it constitutional. Here we have a very different situation. As is made quite clear by the notes that we have all, or that you have all been referring to in the argument of the petitioner here. What the legislature did in this case, or tried to do in this case, was to enact a statute that they reasonably believed at the time allocated the burden of proof on the question of knowledge of age in a manner that was consistent with constitutional requirements as enunciated by the United States Supreme Court in the case law that existed at that time, specifically the case of Ferber versus New York, which they cite in the notes. Ferber was a case that dealt with the constitutionality of the New York child exploitation law. And in Ferber, the United States Supreme Court said a child sexual exploitation law must contain an element of scienter, just like an obscenity statute contains an element of scienter.
Scienter is to age?
Scienter. I'm not
specifying. That's what I
asked. That's my point. This is the point that I'm trying to make. They just said you have to have an element of scienter. And they referenced in the Ferber case two obscenity cases, particularly Smith versus California. And what Smith versus California says is an obscenity statute needs to have an element of scienter, and this means that the state has to prove the defendant has knowledge of the character and content of the material. And that's all Smith versus California said, knowledge of the character and content of the material. That was the case that was referenced in Ferber when the Supreme Court said that a child exploitation statute has to have an element of scienter. So at the time that this statute was drafted, or redrafted in 1987, with Ferber and Smith versus California being the only law out there on the element of scienter, the legislature could very reasonably believe that they could enact a statute that was completely constitutional if they put the burden on the state with respect to the element of scienter to prove only that the defendant knew the character and content of the material. The legislature could have very reasonably believed, and did obviously believe at the time, that they could enact a statute that allocated to the defendant the burden to prove knowledge of the age of the child. Now, as it turned out, the legislature was right. They could allocate the burden of proof to the defendant, but only if the defendant was charged with acts which constituted producing child pornography.
Face-to-face.
Where there was an opportunity for face-to-face contact. After the excitement video case was decided by the United States Supreme Court, as it turned out, the legislature was half wrong. Half right, half wrong. They were wrong when they wrote a statute which allocated to a distributor of child pornography the burden to prove knowledge of age.
Now, counsel, when there's, and this may not have happened here, but there's a statutory revision committee of the legislature, and they look at U.S. Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, District Court, and Wisconsin cases in relation to statutes. Was that done here, do you know? Because sometimes they'll then send a recommendation to the legislature to change a statute. I mean, because it's been 87 to now we're in 98. This statute's been on the books 10 or 11 years, and the legislature's done nothing with it, even after an opinion on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, it's not exactly correct to say
that. Right, because the opinion was not in 87.
And it's not correct to say that they have done nothing up to this point. They have done something.
What they do?
They've drafted. They have drafted at the request of the Department of Justice. They have drafted a new statute. Now, they are completely aware of the problem that is posed by excitement video, and I might add, they are aware of this case.
When was the request made?
Very shortly after this case, after we filed our notice of appeal in this case.
Not when the, not in 19, was it 74 when the
no.
excitement?
No.
Well, I'm sorry, what year is that?
Yeah. 94? 94.
Okay, well, 94. The brief is wrong. I'm sorry. It's 94. So you didn't do it in 94 or 95.
No.
Okay.
No. We did it last year.
But did they have an opportunity to pass that statute?
They had, well, that's a question I think maybe just addressed to some other...
Well, I mean, was it submitted in time?
It was...
Theoretically?
Well, theoretically, yes. Okay. Theoretically, yes.
So now we have a no action by the legislature.
We have some action by the legislature. They are aware of this case, and they're keeping up with what's happening in this case. My guess is, and I can certainly be corrected by people who are more knowledgeable than me in this area, but my guess is they're just kind of waiting to see what this court does with this case before they make a final decision.
Let me ask you, since you proposed this bill into the legislature, is it your position that as drafted now this statute is not constitutional as it affects the distributor?
Yes.
It is unconstitutional. We don't have to worry about burden of proof. At least at the moment you have said it's unconstitutional, so if it's your burden, that's your vision, and if it's their burden, that's their vision. So we've got agreement on that.
I think we do, yes.
Let me just ask you, if we didn't have this legislative history and the statute stopped it too, and it was silent as to who had the burden, then you'd expect, and if it was silent as to scienta other than in that first parenthetical that Justice Prosser referred to, your position would be what? That the state has the burden to prove knowledge of age?
Yes.
And that we can read that into the statute.
Yes.
And then we can read it into the statute because the general rule in criminal law is scienter, knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And court has done that a number of times. Statute silent, we say, obviously they intended scienter.
In fact, the United States Supreme Court has said there's, in effect, a presumption of scienter.
Otherwise it may be unconstitutional if there's no scienter.
Right.
All right. And the usual burden of proof, although the legislature can shift somewhat this burden, the usual burden of proof is of the state to prove every element beyond a reasonable doubt.
No question about that.
So your position here would be if this was absolutely silent and stopped at two, that the state had the burden, that it was a constitutional statute, included scienter, and you'd have the burden of proof.
I think we would argue that, yes.
Okay. Now, as I see it, the problem is, from the other side, it doesn't stop at two.
That is the problem.
You've got it. That's
right.
We
both agree that that's
right. And you've got a history here where the legislature has said, state, you once had the burden of proof. But we're now amending that. We're putting the burden on the defendant. Right?
That's exactly what they did.
That's what they did. So, and they not only say it in the statute, but they've got it all over the legislative history that that's their intent.
No question about it.
So, why, Mr. Ballastieri, do you think, once the legislature has stated that intention, even if the intention is unlawful, unconstitutional, this court can say to the legislature, we're taking you back to the pre-87 amendment, and we're going to read this statute as if you didn't amend it? That's what you're asking us to do.
In effect, I guess.
In effect, you're doing that. So now how can this court sit here and say, hey, we're ignoring 1987 statute?
I'm not asking you to ignore it. What I'm asking you to do...
Well, reread it.
What I'm asking you to do is to look at the last paragraph.
Right.
of the note accompanying the statute, and asking you to look at the overall intent of the legislature, which is what I was getting at in my opening remarks. The overall intent of the legislature in this case, when it drafted this or redrafted this statute, was to allocate the burden of proof on the question of knowledge of age in a manner that was consistent with the United States Constitution as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court.
Let me just finish this. I expected you to say that, so I'm going to redraft the statute now to put in what you want to do. And so in each statute, we can put in the language, to the extent that this is valid under any United States Supreme Court interpretation, and if it's not valid, we really intend the statute to just include those things that are valid under the U.S. Constitution as interpreted by the Supreme Court. Would that be an okay statute?
Well,
put that way, you got a little problem.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's good. Everything is constitutional. Well, in tongue in cheek, Mr. Balistrieri, because what you're doing is asking this court then to redraft a statute in accordance with whatever the current U.S. Supreme Court sayings are.
Because that's exactly what the legislature intended.
Well, but you wouldn't allow them to draft a statute expressly saying that intent, Mr. Balistrieri, because then we would be, you'd have a very short statute book. You could just have a statute, oh, listen, we don't like child pornography. You draft the statute that's constitutional if you're so smart, Supreme Court.
But you see, what you're suggesting is really far removed from what I'm suggesting. I'm not suggesting that you rewrite this statute at all. And I made that point very explicitly in that. I am not asking you to make any change whatsoever in the substance of this statute. I'm not asking you to make criminal anything that the legislature has not made criminal. I'm not asking you to remove the criminality from anything that the legislature did not make criminal. All I'm asking you to do is make a procedural change in the statute, and as far as distributors are concerned, shift the burden of proof.
That's procedural?
That's procedural.
I think it might be substantive if it declares the statute unconstitutional, counsel.
Well, statute can be procedurally unconstitutional as well as substantively unconstitutional.
Yeah, question. Thank you. I found your initial argument with respect to Hall interesting. That the way you would distinguish it is that you said that we said that the legislature knew it was unconstitutional.
And you did.
Yeah, I said that. But it strikes me that argument ignores a couple of things. First of all legislators take an oath to abide by the Constitution. And so to say that the legislature deliberately writes an unconstitutional law and essentially throws it in our face, to me, just flies in the face of common sense.
That's not what I'm saying. That's what you said.
Well, not really, Mr. Balistrieri. Not really. We found that they were aware of how to craft a confidentiality provision that would provide dealers with both direct and derivative use immunity. That's what we said in the case. We didn't say that they deliberately drafted an unconstitutional statute, and I don't think we'd ever say that. But what we said was they were playing with fire. And what they did was they knew that they could completely avoid any problems by drafting it one way, but they didn't, because they really intended to get to use immunity as well.
Yes,
that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here, what it seems to me that the argument is that the legislature deliberately intended to do away with the scienter element. Is there any question about that?
No.
You don't argue with that at all?
No.
So are you saying that the statute is saved because they really weren't trying to violate the Constitution?
I would go one step farther. I'd say not only were they not trying to violate the Constitution, they were affirmatively trying to write a statute that comported with the Constitution, as interpreted by case law of the United States Supreme Court in existence at the time, which they could very reasonably construe as permitting them to do exactly what they did. Unlike the situation in the Hall case, where it was pretty clear that they couldn't do that.
Justice Bradley.
Thank you, Chief.
I have a follow-up of your question. Let me do that. If you said that I'm trying to say that they were not trying to violate the Constitution. Boy, that's nice, you know. Instead, they were affirmatively trying to be consistent with the Constitution. That's nice. And because of that, because they were trying not to violate and trying to be consistent, we should impute that it is constitutional. And it seems to me, if you take that argument, then assuming the good faith of the legislature, as I do, then nothing is unconstitutional. Because I assume, and I honestly assume this, that they are always trying to write a statute that does not violate the Constitution, and, number two, as you say, are always affirmatively trying to write statutes that are consistent with the Constitution, essentially saying the same thing in just a little different way. So, I mean, and as long as they have good faith and don't try to actively violate the Constitution, we should hold the statute constitutional. It makes no sense to me. What am I missing in your argument?
I think you're missing the whole...
Hey,
whole,
tell me, because that's what I hear.
Thrust of my argument, which is...
I hope so.
Which is...
I hope I miss it. Yes.
You're talking in generalities. I'm talking specifics here. What I am saying is that the legislature here wasn't just in some kind of amorphous, abstract way trying to draft a statute which was constitutional. Here we have a legislative history that very specifically says that with respect to this one portion of the statute, namely the allocation of the burden of proof, they wanted a statute which allocated the burden of proof in a way that was required by cases of the United States Supreme Court. And they did it. And that's exactly what they did. They weren't just talking generality. They drafted an allocation provision that, from a reasonable legal perspective, did exactly what the United States Supreme Court appeared to be telling them that they had to do, as far as the element of scienter was concerned. That's a whole different thing than just talking about generally trying to write constitutional statutes, not trying to write statutes that are going to be held unconstitutional. We have a very specific provision, and they very specifically told us what they wanted. They wanted to conform this part of the statute, this burden of proof, through the cases of the United States Supreme Court. At that time, New York versus Ferber. Subsequent to the writing of the statute, we now have excitement video. It's obviously the intent of the legislature, not just to write a generally constitutional statute. It was obviously the intent of the legislature to write a statute that was going to conform to the U.S. Supreme Court's opinions on this specific point.
Counsel, one other thing that I don't understand, perhaps you can be of assistance. In your argument for severance, you seem to be arguing that you sever, and when you sever, you eliminate. You take it away, you sever it, and you throw it away. That's normally what I think the law is on severance. But you're doing something different. You're saying you sever it, and rather than throw it away, you sever it, you save it, and you reinterpret it. What authority can you cite to that says once you sever a portion of sub C, then you reinterpret the severed language as opposed to throwing it away?
City of Madison versus Nixon.
And what proposition does that stand for then?
Exactly that proposition. At page 80. Because that's exactly what you did in City of Madison versus Nickel. City of Madison versus Nickel involved an obscenity ordinance, which track the state obscenity statute. What you did in City of Madison versus Nickel was to hold a portion of that ordinance unconstitutional because the definition of obscenity did not track the definition that the United States Supreme Court said you had to have. So you declared a portion of that ordinance unconstitutional. You severed it. You severed that portion of it, the definitional portion. And then what you did was you read into the ordinance the definition of obscenity required by the United States Supreme Court. And that's pretty much what we're asking you to do in this case. Now, severance does not mean you have to throw it away. There is no case law that I'm aware of that says when you sever a portion of the statute, it necessarily means you have to throw it in the garbage can. Usually that's what happens, because usually when you have an unconstitutional part of the statute, you can't save it. And you have no choice but to throw it away. But this is not one of those cases. Here you can save it. There is a way to save it.
Sever it, and then you're suggesting to impute the language.
To read it in, just as you have in lots of other cases and where you've read in a scienter report.
What language are you asking us to impute and where in reference to the statute? What do you want us to write in?
Sever it for us. Show us what you're severing.
What I want you to sever is those portions of the statute which in terms which define the prohibited conduct in terms of the kinds of conduct which...
Now, let's look at it. Produces, do you want us to sever
well,
that from C?
I've specifically listed those. Provisions of the statute deal with production include employing, using, persuading, inducing, enticing, or coercing a child to engage in sexually explicit conduct, photographing, filming, videotaping, recording, displaying, producing, or performing with a child, or in the case of a person responsible... I'm reading page 22 from my...
I know. Well, let's look at the statute.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. We didn't rehearse that. Tell us... we want you to rewrite the statute for us, like you want us to do.
Right.
Sever it, and then add the language you want.
Okay, well, you're...
Sever from C, and then add
no,
the
no,
language.
No. I'm not talking about... Well, sever from C, but I'm not talking about... Severing. I'm talking about severing portions of the statute
okay.
that deal with acts.
All right, that's what the C does: produces, performs, and profits from.
Right.
So, which one are we going to take out? Which one are we severing? I'm sorry. That's exactly it.
Tell me what words in this statute you want me to sever, and then tell me what words and where you want me to write them in.
For the what. Parts of the statute I want you to sever.
And I'm looking
on page 22 of my brief.
Let's look at the statute. Let's look at sub C, because I understood your brief to say there are portions of sub C that you want severed.
Okay.
In looking at sub C of 948.05, what words do you want me to sever?
Profiting from.
Okay,
promoting.
Make sure you slow down then. Profits from.
This is all on page 22 of my brief.
I know. I'm looking at the statute. Though. Profits from, promotes.
Promoting, importing.
Mm-hmm.
Reproducing.
Mm-hmm.
Advertising, selling, distributing, possessing with intent to sell or distribute.
The those only thing you're leaving in is produces and performs. Severing out the rest of C.
Severing out pretty much the rest of sub-C.
Okay. So what are you going to add now? Now we've got whoever profits from, promotes, imports, produces, advertises, sells, distributes, or possesses with intent to sell or distribute.
Right.
All right. Now, what are you going to add?
What I want you to add is essentially the same kind of scienter requirement that's included in the companion statute dealing with
possession.
In such instances, the state has the burden to prove knowledge on the part of the defendant that the person is a child. Is that what you want us to add?
Well, I want you to add the words that I've pretty much paraphrased from 948.05, which is that the state has the burden to prove a defendant who distributed child pornography, that is, those severed portions of sub C, knew or reasonably should have known that the child engaged in the sexually explicit conduct had not attained the age of 18 years.
That's what you want us to add.
That's what I want you to add in.
Do you concede that if we add that and sever those other portions, we are, in effect,